Okay, so this is the third of our series of Cochrane lectures by Professor Rachel Targish at Cornell University on the general theme of games and networks and the quality of outcomes. Today, more games.
Thank you. So thanks for coming for one more talk. Hopefully, so this is a little. Hopefully, so this is going to be a different style game and something maybe different style game. So last two talks, I talked about learning outcomes and quality of match and maybe natural learning. But a lot of what I did, it was limited to a certain class of games, which I'll come back in a second. And today I'm going to focus on a very different kind of game, that you can think of as deciding adverts in the side of Google and other online advertising forums. This is my list from, I guess, 2 days ago of lots of relevant games. And while I was trying to at the time make it sound like these are also a big variety and very different games, and some ways they are a big variety and very different games, almost all of them are congestion games. Certainly these guys are congestion games. Load balancing and routing is definitely congestion games. Network design, facility location, I admitted that that's sort of a congestion game. It's not a congestion game in the sense that it has to do with locating facilities and not about congestion per se, but it has a potential function, and indirectly everything that has potential function is a congestion game. It just doesn't seem like it up front. And in fact, if you translate it to a congestion game, it's a rather awkward congestion game. It's not, naturally it's not, but at least it's a potential function driven game, and a lot of why congestion games were helpful for me is because they're a potential game, and that one definitely is a potential game. The remaining two are not really congestion games and maybe not even potential games, but they sort of. Network design depends what you define by network design. If you take the fair sharing game I was talking about, our network design, deciding which edges to buy and how to fairly share the cost, that makes it a congestion game. There are many other ways to say it's network design and then it's not a congestion game, but this way it was. And bandwidth sharing, which I didn't talk too much at all, I said maybe it's a quarter of a congestion game. It's not really a congestion game, but it's a continuous game. So the way I drive this potential function, that's a cheap one, can pay over there too. The Nash condition is a very Kruskal-like condition. So it's an ultimate condition of something else. You just kind of have to read off what the something else is. So in some way, all of these are in the class of functions that you have this connection between optimization and Nash condition is very strong, and where you can play off at sometimes natural and sometimes excessively unnatural potential function if you want them. So one big thing that I think I need to do, and many of us need to do as a community, is get out of these games and to consider games which are not like these potential games. And maybe the most dominant and to me tempting and interesting sort of new class of games is this ad sharing game. So I tried to make it somewhat relevant. So I typed into Toronto Google and I got two advertisements. So these are supposed to be the regular results, and there's two advertisements on the side. Two companies, torontoescapes.com and ctorontonow.com, advertising some sort of services on the right. And when I mean adverts, is going to be the game that you can think of such as these companies trying to bid to have the ad shown when I type in Toronto. So that's the keyword that they're bidding on, and these are the ads that are getting shown, and those are the actual results, which I'm going to completely ignore for now. So the way to model this as a search, and I guess I gave this talk some was the variant of this talk sometime in Budapest, and I tried hotels in Budapest, and it comes out, as much as I love Budapest and tell everyone that despite what you think of it being far away, it is a beautiful big city, it is apparently less of a city than Toronto, because I also tried hotels in Toronto to get a bit more ads than those two I saw there. And I got so many ads that the search results were off the screen. You were just full with ads. If you do it with Budapest, you get this site full with ads, but it doesn't actually show regular search results. So Toronto hotels are more plentiful, at least more companies here than Budapest, so when we switch to Budapest. The Budapest sponsored links on the site, these are the companies that were trying to advertise, so there's Hilton of Budapest and Discover Budapest, very similar to the two we have seen. They were arranging these slots, so that was the top slot, that's the next one, and so on down, and the advertisers are, if you kind of read what's underneath the print here, you figure out which company you're advertising. And this is going to be my last slide that has either Toronto or Budapest on it. So basically you should imagine that there are a bunch of companies that like the word typed in, whether it's Budapest, hotels in Budapest or Toronto or whatever, that they would like to show an ad on the site. And your job is to try to match them. So I'm going to have the advertisers get represented by little red dots, and the slots get represented by little blue rectangles. And your job is to decide which advertisers to show at all and which slot. So the answer is something like this. This advertiser gets thrown in this slot and so on. It's sort of a matching problem. Except it's a game, because the advertiser is going to want to get shown and not pay much for them being shown. You have to both decide what to show and also have to decide what to show the advertisers. I'm going to use, and I guess maybe refer to some words that uses more complicated models, but in a simple way of looking at this, okay, this whole industry assumes that you're going to charge by click, that if I look at it as a user, that apparently it's going to be free, but if I click on it, I'm going to have to pay a click charge. And the simplest model, and I think it's not a reasonable model, that the advertiser's value for that click is a fixed number, say advertiser I is going to be a value VI, the value for the click. The assumption is that if you're trying to sell hotel slots, say in the Hilton in Budapest, then every person who clicks on it has a certain chance of buying a hotel room, then an expectation that has some value that it will return to. The linearity, that is 18 clicks value 18 clicks exactly 18 times as much as one click, it's not an unreasonable assumption. It basically assumes that your hotel is not going to fill up. You're not worried that you get so many clicks that at the end they're useless. You always have the marginal value. You can sell him a room and there's a chance he's going to buy a room, or maybe a chance he's going to buy a suite, or maybe a chance he's going to buy a week long vacation, and that adds up in some expected revenue that you get from this. Maybe a more interesting, so the system is that you're going to charge a price fee, which you're going to have to figure out. They have this value VI, and they're going to try to say this every time you click. So the value that the advertiser gets out of this is the value they have minus the click they pay times the number of clicks, and the value for the search engine is the price, again, times the click rate. So one interesting question is here, what's the click rate? One observation is that I'm going to interested in the social happiness or social welfare here, is I'm going to add up the value for the advertisers and the value for the search engine and claim that the value for society is this VI times the click rate. That's not an unreasonable assumption. Indeed, VI has to come out with some expectation that this person will spend so much money, and this price is sort of a monetary transfer between one entity and another. It does not affect the economic happiness. The more interesting question is, what's the click rate? And how do you assume, what do you model about click rates? There are many different models of how to think about click rates. The simplest one looks like this. There is some click rate associated with each of these slots, and they take us for pretty stupid and assume that we're going to click on the top. So these numbers are the probability that if you see this ad in this location, you're going to click. So these are numbers that are all under one. And usually the assumption that they ordered, as I put it on the slide, the top slot is higher value than the later slot, because most people start clicking from the top, or at least that is the intrinsic assumption here. There's certainly a lot of things going on, and people claiming that for some 90-something percent of the population, if your skin is such that the skin only shows up to S4, then practically no one's clicking under there because you don't scroll. But even there, the assumption is that clicks go a little bit lower as time goes. For somewhat more sophisticated or even not so sophisticated users, which is pretty silly, and I guess, but if you do this, then the value for editors or I to be in slot L is, well, it was VI times the click rate, and the click rate depends on which slot they went into. I'm happy to admit that there are better models out there, and one that actually is very easy to accommodate and is that there is a value on clicking advertisements that you know. And I guess we need to go with something simple. If you're looking for hotels, then you probably, maybe not, more likely to click on the word Hilton or the Hilton ad than rather than some unknown name you never heard of. Maybe if you're looking for a cheap hotel, the unknown name you never heard of is a better ID. But still is the case that name recognition helps. So maybe a better way to put it, if you're looking to buy your sneakers, then the word the advertisement by Adidas has more value than Junky Sneaker 17. So something has to do with the property of the advertiser that usually gets modeled, that there's an extra parameter here, that the advertiser, in addition to its value, has the clickability or how much you like clicking on that advertiser. Assume that the probability that an ad gets clicked on is shown by advertiser I gets clicked on is shown in position L is this product. So this is a somewhat more sophisticated clicking rate. I'm going to ignore this for most of this talk except for this one slide, but one to point out in this one slide that other than carrying an extra parameter, which is always awkward to do for a talk, this is easy to accommodate. Why am I saying that? Because if you do this, the value of an advertiser to be on I to be in slot L turns out to be this slightly more complicated thing. Again, value times the click rate, and the click rate is now more complex. And what I have to do is think of what may be reasonable to name effective click rate or effective value. The effective value for advertisement I is not actually its value for a click, but its value times its likability, again, some normalized likability. So this effective value acts exactly like the value acted up there, and if I take everything I'm going to say, in which this effective value will get ignored, and I'm assuming the advertisement is the same just for this talk, I can replace every time you see VI with this VI times gamma I, and you get everything goes through exactly the same. Yeah, so for simplicity, I'm going to ignore this, but if you're bothered by the fact that this model to its advertisement is so identical, then one can accommodate it. I'm happy to think about, and I am actually thinking about, but not in this work, in other ways this model is very simplistic. For example, if the product form, of course, is pretty simplistic. I don't know if it's reasonable or not. I'm not particularly bothered. It says that if Adidas ads deteriorate as they go down lower and lower slots, then Nike ads do the same thing at the same rate. Okay, there is Nike, and there might be a difference between how you use Nike and Adidas, but the way they deteriorate has to do with these alphas. Maybe that's reasonable. A bit of a problem, I think, is that these models all assume that the likability of Adidas in this slot 4 didn't depend on what happened in slot 3. That's definitely wrong. If I'm on Adidas and Nike, I'm only showing you Nike and no Adidas and no other company name you recognize, you're much more likely to click on it than if the other slots are full with them to recognize those. This is a very common assumption in all of economics that it goes under the some assumption called no externalities, which I guess here would mean that if you got slot 5, you're in neutral to what other people got, and you're obviously not. You're not actually neutral. You're not. You usually have externalities in most of life, but in this particular one, externality is very painfully clear. It doesn't matter. If you're in plus 5, it very painfully matters to who was above you. But at least in this model, I'm going to have to ignore it. But I think, to me, it's an interesting boiler question here that this particular form It's not the product form that bothers me, it's the simplicity of the form. It has to do with you and the slot you're in, and it doesn't depend on other forms, but as happens in the other slot. Okay, so that's a very simple model of a game. It's actually more of a sort of, it's a matching problem. It's a sort of combinatorial sender dispute optimization question, matching advertisers to slots. And indeed, if you actually don't play this as a game, then you're indeed in a very simple discrete optimization question. So for this talk, I'm going to restrict myself, ignore these commas, and they vanish from the slide. And the value of slot L for advertiser I is VI alpha, as I promised. And under this very, very simple model, you don't even have to run a matching algorithm or anything fancy to find the best arrangement of advertisements to slots. I made my advertisers arranged by value, and actually, I guess I forgot to repeat this here, but I had my advertisers, if they're single parameter advertisers, they might as well name them in decreasing order of their value. Again, remember, this is not a game right now, it's an optimization question. There's these V numbers, I might as well arrange them with value. And so, you don't have to, and the product is what generates the value. The simple thing to do is, I think there is sorted by advertisers, is to put the top K advertisers in the top K slots ordered by value. The highest advertiser goes in the highest slot. Okay, because that generates the biggest value. This is a very simple optimization question. Okay, but I'm not doing optimization today, I'm doing games, and these people are not going to tell you what their value is, in part because they themselves don't know, but maybe in part because they play games, and they want to know what you're advertising. So I have to get back to what's the game I'm interested in here. And I guess from this slide, you're supposed to remember that the social value, that under the two assumptions that everything is ordered from the lower index ones at the higher value spot, that social welfare is some of the I outside, that is the I advertisement goes in the I slot. So the question is, can we get values? If I go back to the very simple base case here, when there's only one slot, and even next to Toronto I saw two ads, but if there was a single slot, then this is well-known as Vickery auction. We're basically auctioning off the slot among these advertisers. And I could ask each of them to state how much value they want to pay, and what Vickery auction, or also known as second price auction, would do is to avoid the slot to the person who names the highest value, again the order that the top guy, and charge him the second highest value. That's called second price auction or Vickery auction, and it's very easy to see that this is truthful, but this means that if I'm promising you that this is an auction running and you have no other considerations in life, then you might as well tell me what your real value is. If you think about it, if your advertiser is two or three, and assuming these other guys were telling the truth, then, well, he has bigger value. In order to win, I have to name an even bigger value than him, but that's about my real value, so bad idea. I shouldn't do that. In contrast, this guy seems tempting that he might actually try to lie here and give you a smaller value, but that's not very good either. Because if you give you a smaller value, there's a danger that the middle guy will come in between. And anyway, you only have to pay his price. If you actually go under his value in order to pay less, well, then you lose the slot. So that wasn't a very good idea either. So here, because I'm not charging the biggest person, but instead the price is, so the winner is I, and the price is the second highest price, it's reasonable, I guess, so-called truthful, to tell the truth. And what truthful here means, I guess, is that if everyone else is telling the truth, then there's no harm to you to tell the truth either. Or going back to the notion I used yesterday, that telling the truth is a Nash equilibrium. If everyone else tells the truth, you telling the truth is okay also. It's not hurting you. Now, what these options use is so-called generalized second price. And I guess the best way to think of it, that they sold up the second price option and tried to generalize it in a simple kind of way. And here is how generalized second price works. They ordered the bidders in decreasing order of their bids. They put them in the appropriate slot. And they charge the next bid. That is, the bidder that ran in the slot two is going to charge, get charged whatever the third person says. Okay, that's what's written over there. So they all pay different amounts for the clicks. The top guy, remember the top is the best slot, so maybe that's a good idea. The top guy is getting charged the second person, the second side charging the third person, so on down the line. That's the charging thing. That is gets used in the moment everywhere. The value to be derived becomes a kind of complicated thing, or a little bit more complicated thing. The his value minus the price he paid, which is the next bit, times the quick. Is this truthful? That is, does it have the property going backwards? That this has, that telling the truth is always a good idea, or it's certainly not a harmful idea. The answer is not. And it's actually pretty easy to say that sometimes bidding the true values is not an Nash equilibrium. And I guess here's a very simple example where that's not the case. What I did is made the two club bidders have very similar values. This is actually damaging if you're the top bidder, because it will make your price really, really big. So if you actually pick the truth, you get the second guy is getting a pretty good deal because the third bid is very small, so he doesn't have to pay much. But the top guy is getting a good slot, but paying him, there's a trade-off here. He's getting a good slot, but it's costing him quite a bit. And if he only changed his bid to something smaller, like they're suggesting seven, that would invert the slot, but get him a somewhat lesser slot, a lot cheaper price. And you can do the arithmetic, but I guess without doing this, without doing the arithmetic, it's not hard to understand that there's a trade-off here. And the trade-off don't always work out in one direction. The trade-off was that if he switches and sets a smaller number, say, so seven instead, then we'll get him on the second slot, but he can get that at the third price, which is a lot cheaper. So he gets half as many clicks, very, very cheaply, versus twice as many gets quite expensively. And the arithmetic is actually quite favorable here, because he's getting practically no value. Between 8 and 9, there's a lot of difference, getting no value on top. So he likes the bottle much better. So it's not useful. Yet, this is the option that's getting used. Now, the most reassuring thing that it's working pretty well in the sense that I get some earlier versions of advertisements or earlier versions of the auction sites or experiments didn't use this generalized second price. Remember, it's still a kind of second price you pay for the guy underneath you. Some experiments and some very early websites use first price. And first price didn't work because the bits oscillated all the time. They can show up in some papers nice, especially those authored by some Yahoo guy who has access to Yahoo data, can show the oscillation of bits, that the bits were sort of cycling, going up and down. That's a property of first price. You're trying to if you're top, you're trying to come down and see if first price meaning you pay what you did. You're trying to see if someone overtakes you as you take your bid down, and then there's a competition, downward competition evolving, and then it goes back up. It was going around like crazy. And this is pretty stable. So somewhere this is more reasonable, and I guess one maybe explanation for this, that in this game the bidders sort of settle into a Nash equilibrium, and which the first price auction doesn't have one. Okay, this one has Nash equilibrium. They settle into Nash equilibrium, and that's what they're doing, and that's why it's not stable. Which then makes us think what I asked in the previous talk, how good are these Nash equilibriums? The very first paper that I was aware of that started to think of this generalized second price in auction, actually two very first papers, that some of my contemporaries, is a paper by Edelman, Ostrowski, and Schwartz, and a separate one, Gorian, all of which are economists. It says that there exists an Nash equilibrium set of bits that results in a socially optimal assignment. So this is a sort of a positive paper that's saying that there exists a good Nash equilibrium. And let me try to tell you why this is. Okay, I guess it may be worth translating that. In terms of, again, the terminology I used last time, it says the price of stability is one. There is no price of stability. There is an equilibrium that's optimal. Not the price of energy, maybe there are bad outcomes, but the price of stability at least is one. So here is that pretty simple reason to why this is true. So remember, the optimal assignment was that you put the values, sort the values, and put them in the right order of this. And when I want to say that there exists an optimal, an Nash equilibrium that's optimal, I have to give you bits that are reasonable. We already know that telling the value is not always a good thing to bid, but let me give you other values to good to bid. And in order to think of these other values that good to bid, I have to remember that this was actually a matching problem. And matching problems, like maybe linear programs or optimization or discrete optimization problems often, come with something called prices, or two variables, if that makes you feel more comfortable. Back in the version where this was called a matching problem, the story I usually do is that these guys are humans and these are houses, and what's between them is the value of the house for that human. In our case, the value of the hat for the human is this very simple product form. Value of has L to human I is VI times LI. In the matching story, whatever, there's a value number there, that this human I values this has J and some value. And what linear programming or the matching theory tells us, that there exist prices for this habit, in which, if you actually announce those prices, people just choose the right hat, and they get the socially optimal outcome. That's one way to understand what prices do. So here are these prices. So we can, there exist the prices that we can somehow compute, either using a matching algorithm or linear programming if you prefer. Compute prices for this hazard with the property that for every user I, if they now think about whether they want the hat at this price, they will want the right hat. Now, user I, you want. There is some indexing space here. This should, there's some Jason eyes that are hard to distinguish. Oops. So let me try to say in English what I mean. So what I want to do is have first maybe I to evaluate, I should use maybe L, that's an easier thing to distinguish. This is how you evaluate slot L. We know that in slot L he's going to have to say this price PL. And if he looks at this and takes the maximum overall possible out, and my trouble is that apparently the J and I are almost identical on my slides. If any user looks at this and evaluates what his best bet, and instead of taking the max, I should take the I max, then they always come out I. If he'll do the right thing, he will choose his own plot, the one that the optimum one to give him. So then this price is like this. So this is something that follows from the standard sort of matching algorithm. Again, not even taking advantage of special farming. What I'm going to do is have these bits basically be the prices. It's a little more complicated because remember my creative bidding scheme, pricing scheme was the price is the next bid down, and that the bid is by click, whereas here I'm charging them for slots. So if you work this out, you're going to have to do something slightly crazy. The next bid is the price one up divided by the click rate. Okay, that's basically what I'm doing, and wanting to charge these prices and making them big so the price comes out to be the right thing. It's a slightly awkward with the indices, but other than that, so it's possible to backwards engineer a solution as a Nash. This isn't, at least to my case, this isn't a very good argument that the bidders will find this right thing. Like, remember what I did? I solved the optimization problem, I found the prices out of the optimization problem, and then reverse engineered bits that have the right property. It would be much more reassuring if the price of energy would be also none, or if this would be the unique Nash. So that's what I'm going to set out to do and spend some minutes telling you what we could figure out about this. So what are other Nashes like here? What property of other Nashes? So step number one, I'm hoping that this is the unique Nash, no other Nashes, and that all Nashes are optimal. This is too good to be true. It's so much too good to be true that it's not even true in single item action, in the Vick reaction. We're so used to thinking of the Vick reaction as being good because it's truthful that it's a little surprising, at least to me, to realize this. So if I only have a Vick reaction, I'm going to have two bidders named 1 and 2. And to make one of my life easy, I made 2 slots, but the second slot has 0 click rate, so that's actually a useless slot. So effectively, it's only 1 slot, that top slot. This is Vick reaction here. Remember, this is like, it's really not here because it has 0 click rate. So this is the single slot action, and we claim that it's truthful for the bidders to tell their value, or at least that it's a Nash equilibrium they tell their value, but actually that also is the best Nash case because there are other Nash equilibrium is what they could do. They could tell each other's value by mistake, and in this particular case it would work out perfectly. This is a Nash. Why is it a Nash? Well, this person with value 0 is getting the top slot, but luckily they don't have to pay for it, so that's okay. In contrast, because the other guy is bidding 0. Remember, you pay the next bid. The next bid is 0. So it's getting top slot, getting bids with no value to him, so there's no point in this. It's getting value 0. Maybe more disturbing is this person who actually has value for the bid, namely that guy, bid 0 and he's getting a slot where he's getting nothing, and apparently he's okay with this. True. It's because the second guy bid so damn high that in order to add with him, he has to go above his own value, or at least match his value, which in this case is getting nothing either. Okay, so Vick reaction has this problem. There are other Nash equilibria, and in particular, a horrible social value. Optimal social value was 1, because bidder with value 1 should have gotten the slot 1, and instead, be getting nothing. So we can't expect that every social optimum is bad, but at least I want to claim that this is a crazy thing to do, and that was already the case in Vick reaction, that we shouldn't expect this to happen, and I'm going to think about Nash equilibria that somehow exclude this kind of craziness. Now, what's being crazy here, the fact that this is full with zeros is for simplicity. If you don't like zeros, then change this to be a very small rate and change this to be a very small value and everything works the same. The small numbers will answer the calculation. So if that's what bothers you, then that's not crucial. But if another thing bothers you, then that bothers me too. Namely, that person with value 0 was bidding way above his value. That's at best is a very dangerous thing to do. You might actually have to pay above your value and maybe you don't really like that. So that's what I'm going to claim as unrealistic, that in this particular thing, bidder 2 is bidding value 1, bidding above his value, and I'm happy to offer you many different reasons why doing this is not actually a reasonable thing to do. For example, if a bid between the 2 shows up, then you still might get your slot, but you have to pay this bigger price, which is above your value, so you get the negative value for your clicks. That's a dangerous move. And maybe, actually, importantly, because dangerous things people do sometimes, there is zero harm in taking your bid down to your own value. So you avoid the danger if you move your bid down to the VI, because at least they can come in between. And in fact, you're losing anything, at least not in the direct Nash comparison. You only care to get a slot if you're paying under B. If anyone's in between you, you don't actually bung the slot. So moving down your B to B gets you the very same slot at a cheaper price, or at least avoiding your danger. So what I'm going to assume is that all bidders are conservative and they're not bidding above their valuation. You can come up with different economic names for this. At least to my taste, the sort of being afraid of the dual story of that bidding above your value exposes you to a certain danger, and that taking the bid down to your value is not actually cannot actually harm you in any situation. Says that this is a pretty reasonable assumption. If I, oops, I don't know what I did. synthesis. So what I'm going to show to you is that recent result I have with my student Renato, whose picture is really bad up there, I'm sorry. Oops. I have to ask Renato for a better picture. That if you only take Nash equilibria with conservative feeders, then every equilibria is reasonably good social welfare, and reasonably good is the Gordon ratio here, which is this 1.618 or whatever the number is. In fact, if I now go back to a single atom Wick reaction, then conservative feeders make it optimal. So I showed you that even in a one atom Wick reaction, there is bad Nash equilibria, but only if bidders are not conservative, only in the best case. In a single item auction, if the bidders are conservative, then all Nash equilibria are optimal. And in fact, there really is only one Nash equilibrium in the sense that the top guy must win and they must pay the second prize as we predicted in the regular outcome. The other bits can vary. Why? Maybe this is easy and worthwhile to think through. Because there are two, here is the maximum bid, and here is the next guy down. And, next guy down, and if you think about it, because of the conservative rule, no one can bid in this regime. In this regime, this is the only guy that can bid. So if anyone other than him is winning, they're winning at a price under this, and that is crazy not to outbid them. It's not a Nash equilibrium. You should bid higher and outbid them. Okay, so let me try to give you a little sense of, why this is true or how one proves this band of the Nash equilibria with conservative bidders have all good properties. And what I'm going to do is break it down into maybe two steps, that sort of basic outline of an induction proof and a key lemma that causes the inequalities to be true. So, the induction proof goes roughly speaking as follows. A one inductor and a number of slots. I just showed to you, maybe convinced you that if there's a single slot, life is optimal, so 1.6 something is a valid band. So there are multiple slots, then hopefully we can do something by induction and number of slots. So let's start by two cases. If the top bidder happens to get assigned to the top slot, then we're done by induction. Okay, that is optimal. And I'm going to apply induction hypothesis on the rest, which is an identical bidding problem with identical value distribution of one pure slot. So this is the good case. So the bad case is that the top slot didn't go to the top bidder, and there are two interesting numbers here. Who got the top slot and where did the top bidder go? And actually, other than the numbers, I'm going to be more interested in is how bad these gaps are. That is, how much is the value gap between the top valued guy and the one that happened to get the top slot? And how much is the click rate gap between the top slot and the one that the top valued guy got? Given that they get the sectors lambda and beta. And the idea is that, well, if the top bidder got a slot that's not a lot worse, if this gap is small, or alternatively, if this gap is small, then we're pretty good approximation-wise. Either case, if this gap is small, then well, he didn't just get the top rate, but he got something almost as good, and again, I can induct. If instead this side is small, you can say, well, the guy in the top is not the top guy, but almost so. So again, we're almost okay. So our main lemma is going to be that this has to be the case, and if I take this gap, it's always the case that 1 over lambda plus 1 over beta is greater than or equal to 1. So they can't both be very big. And maybe the most insightful first thing I can show you is a special case when both this inequality is tight, and it actually gives you an example of what can go wrong. What am I doing here? This is what I wanted to do. The worst case for two bidders and two slots. So two bidders and two slots, if life is an optimal, then they must have three slots. And beta and lambda, as I showed you, are these numbers on the slide. We claim that there is this inequality, and I claim that here is the worst case. Maybe the top value is 1, and the bottom value is 1/2, and the click rate on top is 1, meaning you always click on this, and the other one is a click rate of 1/2. Those two ratios, this lambda and beta are both 1/2, 1 over lambda plus 1 over beta is indeed 1, 1/2 plus 1/2 equals 1. And if you compute that, what happens? It the conservative solution that is worst case is the bidder, these two bids, the top bidder bids zero and the second bidder bids the house. They get this cost bidding. It has a total value of one, namely one times the house plus half times one, that's a one. The optimum solution instead would have been one and a quarter, one times one plus half times half is a quarter. And it's not hard to verify that these bids are actually a Nash equilibrium. So this is even better than the 1.6 I claimed. And actually, it's not very hard to see that this is the optimum. If you, in a two plus two bids case, there are only these two parameters in life named alpha and beta, and it's very, it's not hard to see that the Nash value is this, the optimum value is that, and given that constraint over the sum of the values, it's one and a quarter is as best you can do. So this says that the Nash equilibrium isn't always optimal, not even with conservative bit, but it's not very far off in the two bit case. So what happens in the nicer, bigger induction case? So I'm going to only sketch the induction proof, and roughly speaking goes as follows. Again, if the top slug was the top person, then we're done by induction. If that didn't happen, then we have this lump, which I still have to prove. And maybe for an easy band that is not getting the golden ratio, just getting a two, let's observe that the easy, that this lemma instantly implies that one of beta or lambda, is at most two. You know, two numbers sum up to greater than a half, one of them must be at least a half. So one of them is at least a two. So let's say lambda is a two, and like it's symmetric if the other one was at least a two. If I do that, then here is the induction proof. We can think of the total value as singling out this first top bidder that got the lowest slot, and remember lambda is at most a two, so this isn't actually that much lower. And then plus the rest. And the rest is now an optimization problem with one fewer slots and one fewer people. So by induction, we get at least half of the total value of the rest. Okay, so I got two halves, adding up to a half of a value. One half I got because I assumed lambda was the one that's less than a half. So this assignment here that's now erased on the board is at least half as much as the optimum should have been. And second, I'm getting half of the optimum because this is now one smaller problem, fewer slots, fewer bidders. So I'm getting half of the total value. I admit that the half isn't actually optimum here. And maybe it's worth telling you without going through too much of the arithmetic of why you get this better golden ratio number, what is the slack in this problem. The slack in this analysis is, and I guess while I wrote down the proof here, I do not go through it. Again, the same thing, induction on top. If the top bidders are the top slot, we're all set. If not, then there is two values here. This time I actually want to use the index of this person, so I call him I. I want to do the same thing again. The first person gets some 1 over lambda times the top value plus gamma times the rest by the induction hypothesis. Except look at what the rest is. It's not the real rest. It's better than the real rest. Because in the real rest, when I meant the rest, I should have erased the top bidder and the top value, but instead I erased this guy. So really, I should have compared it to this kind of thing. And if I do that instead, then I get an extra term, how much this was bigger because everything was shifted one up. And I put that extra term in, and then you play a little bit with the parameters, and you got a little slack here. Okay, because the induction proof had a stronger second step. If you play that back, get that to zero. So this is the natural second step. This is not what our proof wants. Our proof wants this instead. And there's a difference between these two, and the difference goes in the right direction. These are more valuable. But if I add that term back in, which I did, and do a little arithmetic, and solve for the trade-off of what the optimal, which gives the weakest solution here, it's not going to be the half-half, it's going to be some other number, and you get the golden ratio. Okay, so I guess it's all rests on this very simple observation that these two, in any Nash equilibrium, these two bits crossed, then it must be the case that this gap is small or that gap is small with this particular kind of analysis. And the final slightly technical slide, and it turns out this isn't hard to prove either. It's natural. And I don't know if I can try to say it in English, but maybe the math terms have to just copy the English story. So if two pillars cross and you want to argue that that means something, you have to wonder about why one of them is happy. And I guess I can tell you why this guy is happy. That's pretty easy to explain. Because he got the top slot, that's as good as it gets. But it's a little bit more surprising that the top guy is happy. Why should you be surprised that the top guy is happy? First of all, he deserved the top slot and didn't get it. And second, because of a conservative assumption, he in order to argue with this top guy, he didn't even have to pay a lot. He wouldn't have to, and yet he's not doing it. Remember, this guy is conservative. He's not allowed to bid above his value. So this bidder has an option of going on top there. It couldn't possibly cost him much, and yet he's not doing it. Okay, that's basically what I'm using. So bidder one is happy. That's the surprising fact here. His current value is this. His value minus what he paid. Maybe this could be a...